It's Friday, January 7, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. We've been watching developments in Pakistan with great interest, and for good reason. What's going on there in terms of the turmoil after the assassination of Punjab Governor Salman Taseer is a revelation of just how difficult our task is in terms of engaging Islamic extremism, because it's not just out there in the periphery, in the Hindu Kush. What has been made clear in this assassination is that these extremists are deeply invested in and infiltrated within the security apparatus of a nation like Pakistan. But we've been looking at particularly the question of anti-blasphemy laws, because this assassination, you'll remember, took place after Governor Taseer spoke on behalf of a Christian woman who has been convicted and condemned to be executed because of her Christian faith. The anti-blasphemy laws of Pakistan, as well as many other Muslim nations, mean that any slander against Islam, which can just mean not being a Muslim and being a Christian, can be tantamount to blasphemy. Now, what makes the situation interesting today, as we look at the story, is that it turns out that the aftermath of the assassination of this Punjab governor is revealing a great deal about just how complex and difficult the situation really is. For instance, the New York Times' Carlotta Gall reports, among the 100,000 lawyers in Pakistan, less than 0.5% would go out and throw pebbles on this criminal that is upon the assassin. But the rest are hostages because the government is not providing any security. This particular lawyer, that is Athar Malanala, said, why should I risk my life and that of my family? He pointed out that the religious parties had never done well at the polls, and the voting public, and given the chance, did not choose extremism. Yet, and this is where the paper makes a very interesting statement, yet blasphemy is such an emotive subject here, that is in Pakistan, that the day after such a high-profile killing, many seem to side with the murderer, especially for fear of being accused themselves. One man went on to say that sympathizing with the blasphemer was just as extreme as blasphemy itself. Now, if you'll notice, that is the very seductive danger of these anti-blasphemy laws, because eventually almost everyone is guilty if you sympathize with someone who indeed in this case is simply a Christian. This kind of law is the enemy of evangelism and missions. This kind of law institutionalizes a religion and puts the state in the position of theological coercion. And the stakes cannot be higher. We're here talking about, after all, a woman who has been convicted of blasphemy and is now condemned to die. The stakes are getting higher and higher in Pakistan. They very quickly can get higher elsewhere as well. USA Today was out yesterday with a very interesting news story on the fact that a majority of Americans are absolutely certain that the way to get ahead in the society is by education. Mary Beth Markline reports, when it comes to getting ahead in life today, Americans are most likely to say a good education matters most. This survey was done by USA Today and Gallup. It was done back in October and is now reported in their series, What America Wants. When asked what matters most for getting ahead in life today, nearly two-thirds chose either a good education or hard work. The largest single answer was a good education. Now, I took a look at this research data and at the study, and let me tell you something that's very interesting. Americans seem to believe that education is the way to get ahead. Hard work comes in second, but education comes in as first rank. There's something obvious about that. It's obviously true. We understand that education really does matter. Christians understand that education matters. That's why Christianity has been involved in a great educational project all the way going back to its beginning. Some of the earliest Christian contributions to education were the catechetical schools, whereby early Christians were educated in the faith. Christians started the great medieval universities, where you saw the rise of modern higher education. Christians were behind the Sunday school movement, which was at its very heart, first of all, a literacy movement and a way to evangelize by helping persons to read and therefore to be able to read the scriptures. But Christians understand something that seems to be lacking, or at least I should say Christians should understand something that appears to be lacking in this particular report and in the evidence and data from this study. And that is that education is never neutral. Education comes with presuppositions. Education comes packaged with a worldview. And rightly understood, education is about character as well as about content. Yeah, you know, it's true. Education is necessary to get ahead in life, but the wrong kind of education is deadly. Education is not just an issue of whether it exists or not, but a question of what kind of education it is. And that's why many people consider themselves well-educated in terms of the norms of a secular society are really not educated about what matters most. Clarence Page, writing his column in the Washington Post, gets to some of the issues that certainly capture our attention elsewhere. I should say his column in the Chicago Tribune. He deals with the aging of the baby boomers and the fact that on January 1st of 2011, we saw the very first of the baby boomers reach age 65. Now, it's going to take several years for this generation to work through. The youngest of the baby boomers will be scheduled to retire and reach 65 somewhere around the year 2030. Now, get this. Just consider the numbers. The number of Americans to be enrolled in the programs of Social Security and Medicare then by the year 2030 are expected to be 80 million. Now, that's compared to 46 million today. Now, what does this mean? This means demography, the realities of the aging population, are pointing to a very different reality for this nation. What's it going to mean when we have 80 million senior adults, senior citizens, 80 million among the aged, 80 million among the no longer, or at least what is anticipated to be, no longer gainfully employed? Well, that's going to mean a very different society, a very different civilization. And while we're bracing ourselves for the future, we better brace ourselves for this. Now, the government, and indeed in this case, columnist Clarence Page, is most concerned about how we're going to pay for the benefits, how we're going to pay for the massive social programs of Social Security and Medicare for 80 million retirees. I find that interesting, but not the most interesting aspect of this. What are we going to do in a society where so many people are no longer working, and you will have the graying of a population in which there will be fewer who are among the childbearing, child-rearing age group, young Americans in their 20s and 30s and 40s, and more in their 70s and 80s and 90s, and given the lengthening of the human lifespan, even beyond? That's going to be a real challenge for society, of course, but it's going to be a real challenge for the church as well, something we better be thinking about as we look to the future. Interesting ethical questions often come as something of a CAT scan of a society. The New York Times on Thursday reported about a French journalist who's accused of plagiarism. Doreen Carvajal is reporting from Paris about a prominent French television journalist who's been accused in the past of faking an interview, she writes, and is now receiving accused of lifting almost 100 pages of material for a new Ernest Hemingway biography. That's a 400-page book by this author, but accusations surfaced this week in the French newspaper L'Express that he had heavily borrowed passages from a 1985 book in a French translation by Peter Griffin, that is an American biographer. Now, I raise this for this very interesting issue. You know, Americans and, for that matter, Western Europeans, in this case the French, are often very confused about what is and is not a moral issue. For instance, in France, the sexual issues are now said to be no longer really an issue of morality. You may remember that the late French president François Mitterrand, at his funeral, had not only his wife and the family he had with his wife, but he also had his mistress and the family he had with his mistress. The current French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, also, in terms of his own marriage and divorces and family life, is another indication of the sexual moral relativism that has affected that society. But isn't it interesting that everyone seems to know that plagiarism is wrong, that is, borrowing someone's intellectual content is wrong? They're not seriously concerned, at least across the board in the culture, that sex is any longer a real moral issue. Moral relativism has been directed mainly at the matters of morality related to sex and marriage and relationships. But we still seem to know that plagiarism is wrong. I find that fascinating. It is something of an indication of the moral character and content of a people, and perhaps the future moral direction of a culture, that it isn't sure that sex is really all that important anymore, not in terms of moral terms. But if you borrow my words, if you steal my thoughts, well, that's moral thunder. There's a lot out there in terms of the future that points not only to what's going on in terms of the culture, but directly in terms of the politics. And in this case, Business Week magazine is out with a report that shows that the demographic center of gravity in the United States continues to shift towards the Sun Belt and away from the industrial Midwest and the Northeast. The 2010 decennial census is going to, of course, lead to the redistricting of Congress, and in terms of what's basically going to be the redistricting of individual states. But it's also going to mean that there's a political game of, well, musical chairs going on here. There are congressional seats that are moving. 8 states are going to gain. 10 states will lose House seats. And by the way, most of those states that are gaining have been predominantly by tradition Republican states in presidential elections, and those losing have been demographic states. Texas, by the way, is the biggest winner, a 4-seat gain. Ohio and New York are the biggest losers, dropping 2 seats each. Now, one of the interesting parts of this particular report by John McCormick and Tim Jones is that this is going to lead to a real sense of white-knuckled struggle in the states where congressional districts are going to be reduced, because that means that there are incumbent seats that will be lost, and someone's going to decide what redistricting plan will be put in place to someone's gain and to someone's loss. Someone's going to be more likely to hold a seat and someone less likely to hold a seat because of this. It's going to be a fascinating thing to watch. But from a Christian perspective, it also tells us something about the movement of a population. This is not only about the census and its impact upon the makeup of the U.S. House of Representatives, it's also about how the population of the United States continues to move out of many of these Midwestern and Northeastern states into the Sun Belt. That is a great commission issue for us, as well as a political issue for the Congress. There was another news story that I saw in the Business Week issue of this week that caught my attention. It has to do with the fact that in China, there is a huge cosmetic market for men. Now, I didn't know this until I read this news article, but in China, there is absolutely no sense that cosmetics are primarily a feminine market product. In China, cosmetic companies advertise their products, skincare products, skin creams, rejuvenating creams, and all the rest, to men as well as to women. Now, of course, what's going on there in terms of the market economy, the growing market economy of China, is that their new markets are just about everything. And especially in the teeming megacities of China, there are young Chinese adults who are coming in who have disposable income and are trying to identify with a new urban culture. And it turns out that that's going to be a culture that includes makeup, even for men. You have to wonder how long that's going to last. And I'm still trying to figure out what that says. It does mean, at the very least, that cultures really are different. And this points to a very real difference. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. I want you to remember Friday and Saturday, February 11 and 12 of 2011, when we're going to have our annual Give Me an Answer conference for college students here at Southern Seminary. I'm going to speak, Dr. Russell Moore is going to speak, and our very special guest and friend C.J. Mahaney is going to join us as well. For more information, go to the website at sbts.edu. For more information and a wealth of resources, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. Follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/AlbertMoeller. I'll meet you again next week for The Briefing.